We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts or on our YouTube channel, all over social media, or our morning newsletter, KCSN Daily, dedicated to your Kansas City Chiefs. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
All right, we are here, live edition of Threemaw, John Kurtz, Derek Young, Cole Manbeck, all with you here. And guys, look, before we really get into this show ad nauseum today, I think we need to acknowledge a couple of things. One, we heard all season since the 5-0 or 6-0, was it 5-0? 5-0 start by the Kansas Jayhawks. My apologies, how could I mess up college football's greatest story this year? A 5-0 start by the Kansas Jayhawks this year. We heard about the gap being closed, correct? The gap was closing, and congratulations to the Kansas Jayhawks. By God, that gap did close. Last year, Lance Leipold lost to K-State by 25. This year, boys, Lance Leipold only lost to K-State by 20. So congratulations to Lance Leipold and the Jayhawks for trimming that gap, baby. Trimming that gap yesterday at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. A hearty round of applause is needed there. But at the same time, I think we need to give a lot of credit to Kansas State's quarterback, Will Howard, for putting together a Herculean effort, becoming the only quarterback in NCAA history to lead 6 touchdown drives while playing through scarlet fever. It was quite an accomplishment for Will Howard, who had to battle through cholera, reports of dysentery, but in the end, it turns out it was scarlet fever, and the man led 6 touchdown drives through a couple of really nice touchdown passes. So congratulations to Will Howard on doing that. It was a hell of a day, boys. Hell of a night. Hell of a night out of Bill Snyder Family Stadium.
I would agree. And on top of all that, just the lofty status that they've achieved at this point, none of the polls are out, but I think we can anticipate, due to, a lot of chaos in college football over the weekend, that Kansas State will be a top 10 team in just about every metric, unless, I guess, you're listening to Brett McMurphy, who is still ranking Kansas State at number 15 as of this morning. Which is interesting to say the least.
And I believe he jumped Oregon State 37 spots in his poll.
They are now a top 10 team. Yeah, somehow, after not being ranked a week ago. So that was an interesting poll. But yeah, top 10, not just clinching a Big 12 championship game, but clinching a Sugar Bowl appearance, because with the rules and the stipulations of that, Kansas State will be likely in the Sugar Bowl regardless. Now, their opponent is up in the air quite a
Bama,
lot more.
Bama.
Yeah, Bama now has a path to the playoff. Let's be honest. They literally could back into the playoff pretty easily. So
No, D.Y., you're mistaking me. We want Bama.
I know, but
we want Bama.
All the chaos yesterday, you just never know. And then on top of that, it's going to be a great platform for the Big 12. And they deserve this because it is easily the most relevant and appealing and probably will be the most entertaining conference championship game. So they will have College Game Day at it. And it probably made it an easy choice for College Game Day, because I do believe Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit are calling the game.
Great opportunity for the program. Great PR opportunity. Your Kansas State's going to be top 10, as you mentioned, DY. It's going to be the sexiest matchup on Championship Saturday, College Game Day, talking about you on that national stage. The spotlight is going to be on Kansas State TCU on Saturday, and there's going to be a lot of talk. And Kansas State, that number next to your, that ranking number next to your name, it's huge. I mean, it's first time Kansas State's going to be in the top 10 since 2014. It's just a monumental opportunity. Heck, you got, with all the upsets that occurred last night, I started looking at it. I was like, could K-State be the first three-loss playoff team ever? I mean, you know, I obviously don't anticipate that, but that's where they put themselves in a situation where you beat TCU, and you're talking about finishing the season and the playoff poll around 7 or 6. It's a huge, huge opportunity for this program, and I'm just thrilled that they're going to be on that stage, that they got it done. When, you know, I didn't give them much of a chance after that Texas game. I thought the odds were stacked against them. It's asking a lot to win out those last three games and need that Texas loss. And credit to this team. I mean, they not only won out those last three games, but they dominated. You know, they beat Baylor by 28. They beat West Virginia by 17. And they beat Kansas by 20. They just laid it to them all. And I know the Kansas game was maybe a little closer than that final score dictates, but to still win by 20, you hand Kansas their second worst defeat of the season. You know, the worst game they had, the second worst loss, or the worst loss they had before Texas, was a 12-point loss at Baylor. You know, Kansas State beats them by 20. They were 12-point favorites. They covered the number. Weird field conditions, everything. Just a great win. And yeah, I thought it felt like Kansas State's defense was maybe struggling a lot at times. But you look at the final numbers and you're like, I would have thought KU had a lot more yards than they did. It just, the final box score shows that K-State's defense really patched things up, put things together in that second half, and played one of the better defensive performances Kansas has faced this year.
Well, I want to point this out, Cole, because we kind of just did an overview of everything there, but you brought up like, hey, the playoff, like a three loss. There was a tweet from Max Olson this morning that said, according to 538, so he's using 538's little chart here, K-State pops up at 6 in like chances that the team makes the playoff if they win their conference championship. It's at 52%. So there's a 52% chance of making the playoff if you win the conference championship. I don't know where 538 exactly is getting those numbers. I can assure you there is not a 52% chance of K-State making the college football playoff if they beat TCU. Maybe a 2% chance. You can remove the 5. But I guess nice publicity anyway. I don't know. I'm not going to be one to sit here and dwell on like the losses this year or whatever. But, you know, it does kind of like, I don't know what it would be interesting if they didn't have the Tulane loss or if they had beaten Texas or what, you know, whichever one you want to choose there, where that would sit right now.
If they were a one loss team and that, like you said, defeated Tulane and Texas, the winner of K-State TCU is probably going to the playoff. That probably becomes a playoff game in itself. So that's interesting. The 52% chance, I'm with you. I don't know where they were getting those numbers. I can assure you those are incorrect, even though Cole will probably try to put together a convincing case here in a second. But let's put it this way. A three-loss Kansas State's not getting in over a two-loss Alabama or a one-loss Ohio State, regardless if the Buckeyes got their butt stomped at home by Michigan. And you can rub it in if you want.
Well, the next show, DY, before the Big 12 championship, I'll put up like the horrible bosses thing, and I'll be back there trying to figure out how Kansas State can make their way into the Big 12 or into the college football playoff. You beat TCU, you knock them out in front of you potentially. Of course, that would be so strange that a one-loss TCU is ranked, but that split the season with K-State if they won. Two less losses. Hey, you know what though? You got to root for Tulane this weekend in the AAC championship game, up that strength of schedule, get them in the New Year's Six Bowl. Tulane and TCU are a combined 22-2 this season. So two of K-State's losses, you add Texas in there. K-State's three losses are against teams that combined 30-6. I think that also factors into why K-State's been so respected by the College Football Playoff Committee. Their resume, all their advanced metrics, et cetera, show this is really a top 11, top 10 team throughout the season. So, yeah, no, I think the playoff is by far a long shot. I'm very happy with the spot that Kansas State's in. But I make that comment because it is so strange to be in a three-loss team to have a you know, to even be in that realm of discussion as a potential talking point.
I do want to know how 538 came up with that data.
I really would love to know because, yeah, you're right. The fact that you speak it out loud, you're like, okay, well, so you'd have one lost TCU sitting there. You're like, wait, one lost TCU that has beaten you once this year. Like, what are we doing? Oh, man. Okay, another thing I want to hit on just before we dive deep into the game and all that, and this is kind of going in reverse order, but DY, you brought up the Sugar Bowl, right? And I know that we've gone over like the actual, like, would you call it the bylaws or whatever on the Big 12 website that you read about would indicate that, yes, if TCU were to go to the playoff, the next highest ranked regular season finishing team would then occupy that Sugar Bowl spot. We don't know if that's – but you were there in the press box, I presume, talking to folks, DY. So this is why I'm asking you here how confident you are about – the Sugar Bowl being a virtual guarantee at this point, because, you know, apparently TCU's athletic director was already out there campaigning for maybe TCU getting into Sugar Bowl, even if they lose the Big 12 championship game, that they should be able to supersede that, which Cole may have. I mean, my guy, Cole's already ready to have some words with Jeremiah Donati at TCU. If that were to happen, I can't. So I just,
but maybe Jeremiah Donati
for you, DY. What do you think right now?
Maybe Jeremiah Donati thinks Kansas State's making the playoff if they went. Maybe that was his.
Oh, maybe that's it. He reads 538. He reads 538.
Yeah. Now, the funny thing is like, I don't know why he's trying to. The funny thing is he's laying out a scenario where the Big 12 champion that doesn't get to the playoff still doesn't go to the Sugar Bowl, which that is completely the inverse of how that happens. Now, if TCU goes to the playoff, I do think it's Kansas State, no matter what. I don't really recall a lot of discussion. I've heard that Kansas State certainly expects that it's Sugar Bowl no matter what. I don't know. Here's what I know. On the Sugar Bowl website, the Sugar Bowl bylaws or what have you actually says it's the next best record, and that's Kansas State. They went 7-2. It's not even the next ranked team according to the Sugar Bowl for the Big 12. It is the next ranked SEC team. So that's interesting. It's different. For the Big 12, it's the next best record. For SEC, it's the next ranked. So if it's next best record, as the Sugar Bowl website indicates, then it is Kansas State regardless, and you're looking at probably playing Alabama as long as they don't make the playoff.
If they did, is Tennessee like next in line then? Is that what it would?
I would assume, although LSU and Tennessee both have two losses, and LSU beat the crap out of Tennessee, or how did that go?
Yeah, Tennessee beat LSU.
Or it is probably Tennessee.
Tennessee thumped LSU pretty good.
Unless LSU were to upset Georgia.
Well, yeah, okay. So we're kind of looking at like Bama, LSU, Tennessee. I mean, it would be yeah, an awesome game, an awesome experience. The concern to me there is like Texas is, of course, the next team lurking. So if there is some way to get around that, you would think that would be the scenario where they would find a way to, right? But
I guess
anyway.
Well, I can tell you, just like DY said, K-State fully expects to be in the Sugar Bowl regardless. They're fully planning on that. I think, you know, you also think about the Big 12 right now. I know the bowls have a say in this, but the Big 12 is not going to be pushing for Texas to go to the Sugar Bowl over K-State. You know, Brett Yormark and team aren't going to be pushing for a team that's leaving this league to step over a team in the conference championship game. You know, look, if K-State loses this game against TCU, the way the committee has respected them, they maybe drop one or two spots. Texas would still be like 8 or 9 spots behind them in the playoff poll. It'd be such a bad look, even if they could find a way around the bylaws. And look, I know K-State's been screwed a lot before, and K-State fans go to the worst case scenario in these situations because the bowls are such a sham with how they handle this. But I think you can feel very confident that K-State will be in the Sugar Bowl regardless. And you know what? Jeremiah Donati never responded to my DMs from my Fort Worth experience. And I am excited to go to Arlington with a militia of K-State fans backing me. And I'll be prepared this time. I'll have my full body armor to protect myself. And, you know, I'll have my shield and everything to protect myself from the beer throwing. So I'm just excited to have a lot more K-State fans around me at this trip.
And kids, they'll have 2 cracks at a 10th win, which, you know, it's pretty significant, I think, for the program.
Yeah. Cole, by the way, the bar owners in Bourbon Street are the ones that should really be campaigning for K-State to get to the Sugar Bowl, because Lord knows how many Whiskey Sevens you're going to throw down if you get to Bourbon Street on New Year's. And that's
I, I mean, I got to tell you, I had Ben Holiday bottled in Bond Bourbon yesterday from our friends at Holiday Distillery at our tailgate, which thank you to everybody that stopped by, all of our listeners. It was a great time. God, that stuff was so good. If you guys haven't had it, you need to buy a bottle. Quite the tailgate setup that our friends at Holiday Distillery 360 Vodka threw for us yesterday. That was a heck of a time, and the drinks worked magnificent.
Yeah, I was saying that, and thank you to everybody who stopped by. It was really cool to meet a bunch of you guys that came by and said hey to us. So, yeah, 360 Vodka, Ben Holiday Bottled and Bond Bourbon. Get it ready to go for Arlington this weekend, which, Cole, don't let me forget, man. We gotta figure out, like, travel plans, tickets. What are we doing here? We gotta do that this morning after we get done with this.
Yes, we will. We will get everything organized today, throughout today, get the tickets arranged, get the travel plans arranged. It sounds like my wife may be going, but Brody may be going, but John, we'll have room in our van for
okay,
you.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. Cole, I was going to cut you off just to say, will you please tell everybody here the Brody story about what he yesterday morning, and the fact that he didn't get to get you deprived him of going to the KU game. Did he get to stay up and watch the whole thing?
Yeah, he stayed up and watched the whole game. He woke me up. He woke me up this morning and just came into the room screaming that we're going to the championship. Next week is his birthday. I've said it on the show before, but I had committed months ago that we'd go to the Big 12 championship if K-State made it. He's been so invested and locked in. And yesterday morning, on Saturday morning, he came down and woke me up and he said, "Daddy, it is the biggest day of our lives." And I'm sitting there. I got like this nauseous, sick feeling in the pit of my stomach. Like, oh my God, my kid is going to like, if I have to come home and think it, like, K-State loses somehow, you know, that kid's going to live, you know, a life of heartbreak and agony like I grew up with in multiple situations like that. And so to not have to deal and deliver that bad news to get there, I was more nervous for him, man. And yeah, I guess that shows the pressure I'm putting on my five-year-old in the sports world. I mean, he's fully locked in, and I'm just glad we're going to be able to make that trip together.
I know this is not a podcast for this, but apparently Wisconsin has reversed course, I guess, because they lost and finished 6-6, because Pete Thamel has just reported they are targeting Luke Fickell to be their new head coach.
Whoa. Wow. I thought I had seen like two reports out there about Jim Leonard.
I thought that was done too, but then they went 6-6. So they're right.
Are we sure that Lance Leipold's signature, like, that's valid by the agent and the legal people? Lance might be having his legal team look through that a little carefully.
He's
now.
Like, wait, Jim Leonard's not their coach?
Wow. Okay, coaching carousel, man. It never fails to deliver, especially these days. So that's okay. That is wild. Luke Fickell. Honestly, I mean, my initial reaction, thinking from a Big 12 perspective, is that would suck for the Big 12. That would not be for Fickell to leave. Boy,
it's weird that he would leave Cincinnati for Wisconsin when he chose not to leave Cincinnati for Michigan State. Seems like a similar situation.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. That's a debate for a different day. I'd probably rather have the Wisconsin gig, but yeah. I digress. Okay, I'm curious for this conversation about the actual game yesterday, because like Cole is very good and disciplined at games of, like, I know you've said put your phone in airplane mode or whatever, but like Cole is just not actively involved in the group chat at all. I mean, I was completely on edge and I was trying to temper myself as much as I could. That's why, and it was nice that I had a little bit to roll with the cholera dysentery thing, because then I could just say, you know, just wait until you fire off those tweets and just get that. But you know, there were some moments. There were some moments, particularly the Julius Brents pass interference that eventually got overturned. I apologize to everybody that was sitting around me at that point. I started slamming the bleachers as hard as I could with a lot of four-letter words, and I mean a lot of four-letter words. So anyway, but it worked out, and it was great. So where do you guys want to start as far as the game goes? What do you think is the most pertinent, like, salient point from the game? I guess my overall thought quickly would be just, this team showed why they're a Big 12 championship caliber team, because they take shots. I mean, it was just like the West Virginia game. They take some shots and they just bounce right back and keep rolling, and it doesn't matter. And they find a way. They're good enough to adjust in game, which is what the defense did. I just, you know, it felt like a carbon copy kind of the last couple of weeks, where they showed their championship medal, I think, in a lot of different ways.
I thought it was carbon copy of the West Virginia game.
Yeah.
those two games are basically the same thing. What it comes down to, like you said, they do trade punches. They take a punch, they'll give you one right back. But for me, look, the defense makes adjustments at halftime. They kind of made a habit of that, being a really good second half team on defense. They give up 6 points in the last seven possessions, I believe. If you want to go look back in the last five games, I think in the second half combined, they've given up 15 total points in the last five second halves. So kind of tells you Joe Klinerman's winning the halftime adjustment game. But more than anything, because of the, like you said, the taking shots and delivering it right back, I think it's because at this point, I just wrote it. I think they are an offensive juggernaut. Every time they have the ball, it seems like they're going to score over 4 points per drive, what, in four or five straight games. Will Howard at quarterback has basically been an unstoppable force at this point. Colin Klein becomes a better offensive coordinator with every week. They are just, you know, since Will Howard took the reins in the various games that he's quarterbacked, no team has really had an answer for this offense. And to be quite frank, it wasn't all Will Howard against Kansas. So I'm not going to give him all of the credit, even though he's been great. In the second half, they threw the ball four times. That's it. They didn't even complete a pass in the second half, I do not think. That's when Deuce Vaughn took over. DJ Giddens continues to be a fourth down closer. Look, the offensive line played a pretty poor first half, and Will Howard was pretty good in spite of it. But in the second half, the offensive line, I don't know what happened at halftime. If there was a pretty tough conversation, but they came out roaring in the second half, and they controlled the game, and they put the game on the offensive line's back, and they carried.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Yeah, one of my biggest frustrations in that first half, DY, was the offensive line. I mean, the running game. K-State had 63 yards on 12 designed runs in the first half, but 32 of those came on one Deuce Vaughn run. And then there was nothing else really popping other than the Malik Knowles little jet sweeps for the two touchdowns. The second half, K-State runs the ball 27 times for 168 yards and averages 6.2 yards per carry. You know, they manned up and pushed them around and got that running game going. K-State ran the ball on 26 of their final 27 plays to end the game and inserted their will and their physicality and wore that KU defense down. Because there was a point where the time of possession, KU had about a 10, 11-minute advantage in that game. And then finally, K-State was able to start to dominate up front. And, you know, they ended up averaging 5.5 yards per carry, which to my surprise tied for the second most against that KU defense the entire season. KU only Texas 7.5 yards per carry was more than what K-State rushed for on average against that KU defense, which is not good. But you know, K-State was able to run the ball effectively in that second half and really dictate the pace of the game. You know, when I look at that game, I think of three big spots, maybe four big spots, situations that where the game could have swung. Obviously, shout out to Ty Zentner, man. And we talk about him later. Like that kid, he played his ass off. I mean, the hang time that he was putting on the punts was incredible. The distance, everything. Obviously, the muff punt to start the game. That was huge because KU gets the ball after K-State has to go three and out and goes down the field and scores. You get a little anxiety in that stadium. So for K-State to get up 7-0 and then never trail throughout the game, that was huge. Another big play by Zentner was the kickoff, where he pooch kicked it up high at around the 5-yard line, and that results eventually in the safety because they had a block in the back. They start at the 4-yard line, and K-State gets the safety. Another big play by him there. Obviously, everything he's done, he's 8 of 8 on field goals since he took over the job, so he's been quite the weapon. But what I want to say also, where this game could have swung, you have the 3rd and 11 at your own 4, and Deuce Vaughn gets an 80-yard screen, which K-State has not had success running that type of screen all year, and it worked. And so that was a huge play. K-State gets a touchdown to push it back out. And then another huge play, Will Howard fumble, right? And you start to think, if KU goes down and scores, they had 2 minutes. If they go down and score, it's 30-28 at half, and KU gets the ball to start the second half. But K-State's defense manned up, got a 3-and-out, got to halftime up 2 scores, and then, you know, goes out in the second half and never lets it get within that 1-score margin. And then obviously the 2-point conversion play was huge because you would have felt some pressure at that point, but to keep it at 10, you felt decent about that. Special teams was just huge in that game. The Malik Knowles kick return, special teams played great. I mean, we talked about it all year. That's got to be an advantage area for you. Ty Zentner averages 63 yards per punt, an average net of 57. KU's punter on his 5 punts averaged a net of 38 yards per punt. That's a huge advantage area. And then the kick return game, everything. K-State outplayed him big time there.
Yeah. I will throw in one last play. And this, the game was maybe not over, but fairly in doubt at this point. But another huge play is the play that Felix made on 3rd down when it was a 2-possession game. I think it was Devin Neal and just got him in the backfield like a TFL. And that was when Leipold decided not to go for it, which to me was a curious decision there. I would be a little frustrated with that if I were a Kansas fan, but just one last play to tack on there when it's still, they could drive down, make it a 1-possession game and put some pressure back on you.
Ty Zentner, I don't know. You might've mentioned this, it was his punt that really caused the muff to begin the game too. I mean, that guy had to chase backwards and run it down. So, I think that played a part in the muff and set up obviously Kansas State's first touchdown, and pretty timely for him. Look, some of this stuff is what have you done for me lately? And right after the awards, when all their eyes are on you, he just was named a semifinalist for the Ray Guy Award and then has that kind of performance. It makes you wonder if that, you know, maybe uplifts him into the finalist category and a real chance of winning that thing.
That'd be cool. That'd be cool, man. He deserves it. And a guy that, by the way, just like bleeds purple, loves K-State. Yeah. His quote after the game, I saw you tweet, DY, like there's no place better in the world than Kansas State. He did the kiss the power cat thing on the turf before he left. Shout out to Ty Zentner, man.
Yeah, he played at Butler Community College, Shawnee Heights in Topeka. Go ahead, Cole.
I was just going to say, I mean, really, DY, to your point, he was largely responsible for 9 of K-State's first 16 points, right? I mean, the safety can be largely credited to him because of where he set him up and the muff punt. I mean, yeah, that the punt was absolutely the reason it got muffed. He banged that thing and it was so high in the air and the wet football. I mean, yeah, that it was a huge punt. I mean, he was great.
And Brendan Mott deserves credit for he's the one that forced that holding call to get that safety as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. That was my first reaction. I was like, man, Brendan Mott doing it again. That guy continues to find ways to make plays. And I mean, they seemingly are just finding guys making plays at the right moments at any point. It's interesting. I'm just a thought that I had is like Cole talked about, you know, I mean, the last 3 weeks they've blown teams out back to back to back to win these games. And yet at times you're like, you know, there are moments with the defense or even the offense in this Kansas game where you're like, man, this is really frustrating. It doesn't feel like I would have told you my overall feeling about the offense coming out of the Kansas game was like, eh, yeah, they were pretty good, but like, I don't know. There were some moments that left something. And then you look up at the end of the day and you're beating teams by three touchdowns on your way to the Big 12 championship game, which to me is just evidence like they do have more depth than we thought at the beginning of the year. They're finding guys to step up and make plays. They dealt with not having two safeties again. And I thought for sure Kansas was going to hit a huge play or two because of some miscommunication on the back end. With guys like VJ Payne having to step up and play, and that really didn't happen. I mean, that's something Kansas, they had the ball down the sideline that was maybe a push off, kind of a one-on-one jump ball. Jalen Daniels got loose for a big scramble, but I don't know. They didn't have like the massive plays for a team that's really all about the big plays. And they're just finding ways to kind of patchwork some things through that and still play at a championship caliber level.
Yeah, I think the only times where it felt like, man, they were getting to K-State was maybe early in the run game. I mean, but that's Devin Neal making plays too. So you got to tip your cap to him. He that dude can play. He's one of my, you know, favorites probably to watch in the league. That guy, you know, from Lawrence High too. So good for him. I'm glad that he wasn't really badly injured, obviously, because he can play and he's a good kid too. So you like to see that for him. But yeah, they never really had a whole lot going in the passing game. Well, let's go back to the other side of the field, too. We were talking about the offensive line, not necessarily having a good first half, and then coming out in the second half and just kind of dominating. And I thought the defensive line did the same thing. So I think that really what flipped was, you know, in the second half where you dominate the line of scrimmage, where I think KU controlled the line of scrimmage in the first half. It's funny. It's going to be ironic because you were laughing and making jokes, you know, deservedly at the case, some of the KU media reports, right, about Will Howard's thing. Well, the offensive line, I think, did have a bug going through it. And there were some guys, you know, playing through some, you know, illnesses throughout the week, through the game. So I think some of that, too, is maybe getting halftime. I don't know if you get another IV in you or whatever, but I think that probably helped because I know there were some of those guys dealing with some sickness throughout the week along the offensive line. I think that was the problem spot when it came to the sickness this week. Not necessarily Will Howard, who probably had something going, it sounded like, early in the week that wasn't even flu-like symptoms, but I think it was the offensive line that we're kind of concerned about. I think even the announcers, now it was Tim Brando, so take this for what it's worth, but it sounded like even maybe at the beginning of the game or before the game said there was, that they heard or were told that there's a chance that Kansas State would have to use multiple centers. So I don't think they ever had to, but it kind of shows you that the offensive line was going in there probably not 100% for that game, which, you know, makes it more impressive what they were probably able to do in the second half. And another thing with the offensive line that I like talking about, I don't know if you guys saw, that they really had that jumbo package. Just the third week in a row that they've used it. Andrew Langang sometimes as a sixth offensive lineman. You know, against Kansas, they even had a package. I think they scored on it with seven offensive linemen on the field. They brought in Carver Willis as a 6-1, and then Andrew Langang almost as a fullback at times. So that's pretty fun. It had been with just DJ Giddens on the field. This time they did it with Deuce Vaughn.
Yeah, I like the play call on the fourth and goal to go outside with Deuce there and have a walk-in touchdown because KU had loaded the box. And you think of that KU defense, you don't think they're very good, but I can recall multiple goal line stands by that KU defense. Remember the Oklahoma game in Norman when they had four shots from the 1 yard line and OU couldn't get it in right before halftime against that KU defense. So, you know, when you're loading the box with 11 guys, it's hard to get a push. They bottled it up, but K-State got on the perimeter and got that touchdown. You know, on the defensive side of the ball, John, you mentioned big plays. Devin Neal's longest rush in the game was 11 yards. You know, he averaged 3.7 yards per carry, second lowest that he's had this season in the game. Jalen Daniels' longest pass was 33 yards, but outside of that, no real big plays, to your point. And how often did they run that? You know, they ran a lot of speed option, but they also ran a lot of option drop back, right?
Yeah.
And that is so hard to defend, you know, because of all the movement and the misdirection they're doing and the tricks they can play on you. And how many times did they do that? And Jalen Daniels had no one to throw to. He sat back there and couldn't find anybody open. Now, there were a couple times where, you know, he missed a couple guys where they did have guys open right over the middle. There was one that could have been a touchdown if it's right on the money and goes deep. But for the most part, you know, K-State was able to hang in there with their replacement safeties and get the job done. And, you know, 28 plays in the second half, 96 yards for that KU offense, 3.4 yards per play. You know, DY mentioned their last seven drives of the game, they score 6 points. K-State holds KU to 2.45 points per drive for the entire game. KU came into that game number 20 in the country, averaging 2.9 points per drive. So you hold them below. K-State held KU guys to a season-worst 5.5 yards per pass. They were over 6 yards per pass in every game this season. They were number 8 in the country in yards per pass this year, led the Big 12. K-State's secondary, the job they did was phenomenal. And KU only averaged 4.9 yards per play, which is the second lowest of the season for the Jayhawks, behind only the 4.6 yards per play they had against Iowa State earlier in the year. So, yeah, K-State's defense was so good. And in the second half, I mentioned the 28 plays for 96 yards, only 14 carries for 29 yards, 2 yards per carry in that second half. That's a KU offense that was averaging 6.5 yards per carry over the previous three games, which ranked number 5 in the country in that time span. They can really run the football. And, you look up the final numbers, and like I said earlier, it felt like KU had more yards in that because they kept sustaining drives. Like, it felt like they just, in case they couldn't get off the field at points. But at the end of the day, the numbers were really good. The defense stepped up.
Probably meant that Kansas's success rate on offense, that's tough to say, was probably higher than some of those numbers would indicate too, I'd imagine. Just by down and distance, they were probably doing better.
Yeah, I agree. That's exactly how it felt. But I think it speaks to, Cole, some the thought that having a week, if you give Joe Klannerman like a week to prepare for an injury in the secondary and figure out how you're going to work around it, get a guy ready and make sure that they're knowing how many snaps they're going to be playing, et cetera, then it's a much better situation than losing a guy in the heat of battle in game. Now, I guess Kobe Savage, I say that. I mean, Kobe Savage, they didn't have any problem after it happened against Baylor. But it felt like against West Virginia, it was like when Sincere Mason went out, they started having real big issues. VJ Payne was having trouble with some run fits, et cetera. And it didn't feel like a major weakness. Like, you didn't look out there at the defense and say, like, oh, there's a huge glaring weakness there. And Derek, I know you early in the game were saying that Kansas was wisely really going after both VJ Payne and Nick Allen, you know, a couple of guys that would be perceived weak links on that defense. But Joe Klannerman found a way to really neutralize that throughout the game as it wore on.
Yeah, especially with VJ Payne, because he played a better game than he did against West Virginia, especially better against the run. I think you saw KU maybe pick on him a little bit in the passing game, but he made strides in the running game, at least wasn't blowing through gaps and weren't necessarily his like he did with the run fits in Morgantown. So I think he took a step forward, and the more he plays, the better he'll be. He's just a 18, 19-year-old kid at this point. So bright future ahead of him. And, yeah, we'll see what happens. I don't even remember seeing. I'll have to look. Did T.J. Smith really play?
I saw T.J. Smith out there several times. They also had a set on that 16-play drive in the second half. KU had. They had Max Marsh, former walk-on quarterback, out there at safety for a few snaps as well. So, you know, they were getting kind of thin back there trying to rotate guys. Drake Cheatham got banged up on a play. He came back in on the very next play because it was into the quarter. It was back in on that first play of the fourth quarter. But, yeah, that was a drive where I think KU, they had the 16-play touchdown drive in the second half, and every other drive was 3 plays or less in the second half. So it was just that one drive. K-State was getting gassed. KU kept converting on third, fourth down. But, you know, the defense bottled them up outside of that, which is why I think that 2-point conversion play was so big. Yeah. Just because, you know, you get in an 8-point game, K-State really has to score then. So keep it at 10, and then the big kick return to follow. And to your point, John, I couldn't believe Leipold punted. I mean, I just assumed at that point in the game that everything was 4-down territory for KU and that they would call plays anticipating that. And I was saying to my friends in the stands, and BJ Kissel, he was sitting next to me. I was like, you give this KU offense, if they come into it determined that they have 4 plays to get 10 yards, that's a hard offense to stop. If they have 4 plays every 10 to get 10 yards to get a first down, and, you know, K-State's defense, Felix, that was a heck of a play, but I still can't believe they didn't go for it.
Yeah, I thought it critical to me. I know you talked about the 2-point conversion, which I think it's fair to put some stock into that. I thought the biggest critical section of the game was when it was the end of the first half, beginning of the second half, where Kansas State had 3 3-and-outs in a row, after the defense had been struggling. And then the fourth one was when Drake Cheatham forced a fumble that was recovered by Desmond Purnell. So that was four defensive possessions in a row where you had three and outs and forced the turnover. I thought the game turned right there.
Yeah, because at that point it felt like there was no chance of stopping the Kansas offense every single time they got the ball. And they strung that together and kind of weathered the storm there until the offense could get it figured out and start ground and pounding the rest of the way. So, yes, big plays there. And I don't know, Cole, to finish just on the light bulb point, one thing I had heard talking to Kansas friends of mine, even Kansas media folks, friends of mine, that was kind of what they said, like, love almost everything Lance Leipold is doing, but there have been a couple of like game management, in-game tactical errors that had left them frustrated. And I have not watched Kansas football closely enough this year to had really picked up on that. But that was like the first moment where I got a hint of that, where I was like, man, I don't know about that. Like how you're in a two possession game with your offense. I mean, you're basically that comes down to like, okay, you're trusting your defense now. I mean, you know, it just felt like that was going to be the drive where K-State totally finished them. And that was just you could not have asked for a better drive. You know, it took what, 4 or 5 minutes off the clock, just straight down their throat on the ground, and it ends in a touchdown.
8 rushes for 85 yards. And really, I thought the biggest play was the very first play of that drive. You're backed up at your own 15 after the penalty on special teams, and Malik Knowles takes it 30 yards on a jet motion sweep, which K-State clearly saw something.
Yeah.
It's kind of ironic. I think Malik Knowles had 2 carries all season, the 75 yarder to start the year and maybe one other carry on the year. And then he gets 2 touchdowns. There was one point where Malik Knowles had 3-4 carries on the season and scored 3 touchdowns on 4 of those carries. And then I thought Malik Knowles played one of his better games, actually, even though the box score won't necessarily show that. Only 2 catches for 10 yards. First of all, that catch over the middle was a heck of a play to go up and snag it. But just what he did in the running game, the kick return game, blocking, I thought Malik Knowles played a fantastic game as well. So, to get off your own, not necessarily goal line, but get out there to the 45, and then you could just pound it in the running game. That was a huge drive and just put the game away. And that was a relief, because it just, KU just kept hanging around, and it was frustrating that you couldn't just completely bury him, but then they did.
Well, and how about, I mean, I'll make this point on Malik. After that catch, I'm watching him jog off to the sideline and, like, I mean, shook it off, got right back into the game, because I just, with his, and it has, granted, it's been a while now since this has been an issue, but with his injury track record throughout his career, I'm sitting there like, oh boy, okay, that was a really tough shot he just took. Like, what's going to happen here? Man, just a warrior now. It just speaks to the growth and development of Malik Knowles. You know, I mean, there are not as many of those stories in college football anymore because of the portal and how everything works. But Malik Knowles has stuck it out, you know, through some transfer rumors multiple times throughout his career, and has turned into exactly the kind of dude that the K-State needs here at the end of his career, and displayed, I think, a ton of toughness with that. So shout out to Malik. All right. Are there any other kudos, anything else from your notebook in the game when we're talking about what happened to the actual game that you guys want to get to here?
No, I'd like to give kudos to the official that talked the stupid ass ref out of the pass interference that tried to flag Brents from, was he 40 yards away when he threw that flag? I blew my mind. Shout out to the guy that was within that, who had the call and talked him out of that, because that was a huge play. I don't have anything else in that game, guys. I thought, you know, just an all around business, like solid performance, got the job done. And I would just say, don't discount how much pressure was on these guys in this situation, the coaching staff, the players. You know, I was a nervous wreck, obviously, but to have that, the high stakes opportunity against your rival, you know, with them having nothing to lose, to win by 20 is very impressive. And just very businesslike effort.
Well, is it though, Cole? Because the official Kansas stance, the official talking point, the platform, if you will, from the Kansas National Party, is that Kansas played well enough in that game that the streak is assuredly ending next year in Lawrence. We've seen bold-faced declarations, even from those who have not been very good with bold-faced declarations before, that the streak is ending next year in Lawrence. So I don't know, Cole. Was it really that impressive?
Yeah, I'll be curious what the line looks like next year in that game. That'll be a very tough matchup. But yeah, I saw that. Was it the Bri sticker guy, Bryson sticker, that said that this would be a playoff team or New Year's Six team if it wasn't for special teams? And I was like, your defense ranks 127th out of 131 teams in points per drive. Like, they there's some definitely irrational fans there.
Well, I was my Scoopmeister declared it a win next year already.
Oh, wow. Well, the very credible opinions there.
Yes. So.
He's got a strong track record of accuracy, too.
Yes.
Correct. Yeah. About as good as that guy who was reporting on the Lane Kiffin situation all week.
Oh, yeah. That's real bad, too. What I will give credit for to KU is the KU teams in the past, they would have probably, you know, gone into the fetal position and laid an egg the rest of the game after they went down 23-7. I knew that this team would probably stay in the fight and kind of, you know, make it at least a three-quarter game. They've definitely made strides. They are no longer a incompetent system and program. Now, just like Kansas State at one time, they need to upgrade the talent a little bit and maybe make some better, you know, in-game decisions and stuff of that ilk. But at the same time, they've come a long way.
Yeah, I mean, look, don't get it twisted. Here's the deal. I mean, I'm tongue-in-cheek and having my fun here. But right. That's because Kansas clearly is worlds better. And you guys know I've said that on the – like, I've been the guy defending Kansas every step of the way here. That's been right. My role here on this thing.
I'm talking
about it. And that, yes, I mean, they're legit, man. I mean, that was – K-State is a damn good team. And it did take a lot of – I mean, there was – Kansas continually put the pressure on you. They did not go away, which I certainly didn't expect them to the entire game. They made – a world of progress. The annoying thing is that with a fan base that has not watched football in 15 years, coming into a 5-0 start to get these lofty, ill-advised expectations of what the season is, where they are in regards to a program that Climate has put in 4 years of blood, sweat, and tears to get to this point and this moment, that is the part where it's like you needed to be humbled a little bit there, a lot of folks. So that's where this comes into play. Is that going to be a really tough game in Lawrence? Hell yes, it's going to be a tough game in Lawrence next year. But, I mean, K-State's won 14 straight of these things. And, by the way, this wasn't like one-year rental Adrian Martinez quarterback that beat Kansas. This was revelation Will Howard, who's playing like potentially the best or second-best quarterback in the Big 12 Conference, Will Howard here, which dramatically changes what next year looks like for K-State. So it's just – let's just be easy. I understand, Hawks. You got a little high and mighty there off that 5-0 start, and you need some copium here at the end because it didn't work out the way you wanted. You finished 6-6, and you got thumped in Manhattan again. That's where all of this comes from me. Okay, so just a little heart to heart for my Jayhawk brethren there. All right.
Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime
on May 3rd. Summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. I have a lot of respect for Lance Leipold and that coaching staff, you know, especially after watching them in person. I mean, where I'm most impressed is obviously their scheme, but they've really gotten a lot better up front, you know, on that offensive line, especially that was a huge weakness for them for years. And, you know, they lead the Big 12 in sack percentage allowed. You know, they've only given up 8 sacks all year, and they mostly kept K-State out of the backfield, out of Daniels' hair. So, you know, They've made a lot of strides. There's no doubt about it. But yeah, there was just a lot of chirping all year, right? I really enjoyed last night. I had trouble going to sleep because I was enjoying so many of the tweets being brought up from KU fans after K-State lost to Tulane, with all the chirping from KU fans talking about how K-State fans actually thought they were going to be good this year. You know, we're the better program, et cetera. It's, you know, at the end of the day, it's clearly still night and day. Kansas State is in the Big 12 championship and KU's 6-6, which is a huge step for them, no doubt. But there's still a pretty big gap.
Well, let's walk through some of this logically too. Kansas Twitter spent half the week willing Chris Klieman to Nebraska, saying that he was the definitive favorite for the Nebraska job. Okay, so he's a good enough coach for that, yet you're sitting here saying definitively he's going to lose next year in Lawrence. Like, he's this great coach for this job, but yet at the same time not good enough to – I mean, there's just a lot of logical inconsistency here. Look, I understand it's Twitter. I get how it works. I understand the game. And by the way, I feel like, Cole, you're right. I've got a bunch of stuff saved in the bookmarks. I feel like I was pretty nice last night, all right? You know, I kept it to a little more general bit the entire night. So I could have been meaner.
You did touch on it a little bit there, Kurtz, and I almost want to bring up that conversation when you brought up Will Howard and the level of play. Well, we kind of almost had it, and I think in the group chat, who's the second team all Big 12 quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, that's what was his final stat line from last night?
Well, he threw for 213 in the first half, but I don't think they completed a pass in the second half, so he might have finished at 213. Yeah.
He was 11 of 21 for 213 yards, but really a remarkable 10.1 yards per pass, two touchdowns, no interceptions. Now, the 10.1 yards per pass, to be fair, is inflated by an 80-yard screen, right? Yep. But, yeah, you know, Will still made some really nice throws. And, again, there were a couple third and longs where K-State converted. Will Howard delivered the ball right on the money. So, you know, I was actually looking at his final numbers for the regular season, 9.3 yards per pass and a passer rating of 170.2, 13 touchdowns, two interceptions, 63% completion percentage. And I was going to check to see where that passer rating would rank him, guys. That would rank him fifth in the country if he had enough snaps, behind Max Duggan, who's number four. And the yards per pass, let's see if I can get that for you. The 9.3 yards per pass would also rank him fifth in the country, actually ahead of Max Duggan and just behind CJ Stroud of Ohio State, who has 9.4 yards per pass. All right.
Listen, I don't think he's had enough of a sample size where he's going to be anointed the all Big 12 second team quarterback. I just don't think that there's a scenario where that's going to happen. He still hasn't played enough to even qualify for some of these statistics that Cole just laid out. As he pointed out, he just doesn't have enough, you know, playing time because of it. But he is the second best quarterback in the Big 12 right now, or 1A or a 1B to Max Duggan's 1A. I will say that too. And if we're going to talk about last numbers a little bit, 11 of 21 for 213, it was a one score, one touchdown pass, I want to say, maybe two.
No, two. Yeah, two.
Two. Well, he probably has another one. If not for a drop, I think.
Malik.
Yeah.
Malik. Oh, yeah. Phil Brooks, I thought when he was on, it was either a post or a slant there where he dropped it right in traffic as well, going towards the north end. I think he catches that. There's a chance he slips through and goes to the house as well. So, yeah, 11 of 21, maybe not his best completion percentage on the day. And I will grant to the receivers that some of it has to do with a wet ball as well. Those conditions were not easy, but for the first time this year, I think he was a victim of some drops as well that would have improved that accuracy.
You know what really impresses me, guys, is he always keeps his eyes downfield. You know, how many times were I was screaming run? You know, he slid the pocket. He doesn't panic. He maneuvers the pocket so well. He slides around in it. He senses pressure. And the multiple plays where I thought he should have taken off and ran, I think of obviously the Sammy Wheeler touchdown, right? He just kept his eyes downfield, manipulated the defense, then looks back and finds Wheeler wide open. I also think about a 24-yard pass to Phillip Brooks where he slid the pocket out to the left. He could have ran, but he kept his eyes downfield and hits Brooks right in stride for 24 yards. I mean, Adrian would have ran probably in those situations. That's not a knock on Adrian. I'm not trying to take a shot there, but that's just the difference between the two of them, I think. And, you know, I love it. I mean, he's just been so good, and you now have a great quarterback moving forward in the future. Look, if he finishes this season the right way, he's going to have two big stage opportunities, Big 12 championship and likely the Sugar Bowl. You know, if he finishes out strong, you're talking about maybe a preseason first team all Big 12 quarterback, right?
I think you are. And another thing is he's really good on third down right now.
Yes.
Really good on third down. He's probably not going to be the second team all Big 12 quarterback, but it's not going to be a West Virginia quarterback. It's not going to be Deckers. Jalen Daniels got hurt. It's not going to be Sanders. Oklahoma hasn't had enough quarterbacks there. Tech hasn't had anything there. Duggan Are they going to give it to Quinn Shapen? Ewers? They'll give it to – it has to be Ewers or Shapen. They played the most.
No. No. Blake Shapen is terrible.
Well, then it's going to be Quinn Ewers, who really hasn't been outstanding either.
Terrible, too.
Yeah, Texas all of a sudden became a tremendous team when they stopped letting Quinn Ewers throw the ball. Like, that's – Texas became great when they said, Quinn, no mas. Let's just give it to Saquon Barkley 2.0, who's in our backfield.
And Quinn Ewers is probably going to be the default second team All-Big 12 quarterback.
I think I can give it to Dylan Gabriel, who finishes the year 6-6 season. Great year, Brent. Great year. 6-6.
Who could have ever campaigned for him as K-State's head coach?
Ewers even is more deserving than Gabriel, and that's not saying a lot, I know.
Did you see what Oklahoma did to him?
They threw it to him again.
What they did to him, how they got him, that's the only highlight I've seen from the Tech game. Full disclosure, I have not watched any of it, but I just saw that pop up on Twitter. I was like, how are you doing that to Dylan Gabriel? Did you see it, Cole?
No.
They like threw it, wide receiver reverse pass thing, and they threw it to him rolling out on the sideline. But the guy leads him right into a defender, and he just got destroyed, like uncomfortably destroyed. It was, it was a hell of a hit. Hell of a play.
I want to take this moment to take a shot at Oklahoma. I know that I know that we don't always do this on our podcast, take shots at other teams, but I will take this moment to do so. Spencer Rattler at South Carolina, back-to-back wins over Tennessee and Clemson, all of a sudden looks like a prolific quarterback, a five-star that he once was. Cale Williams, probably your Heisman Trophy winner. Lincoln Riley, probably going to win the Pac-12 at USC and maybe make the national championship, of course, if they make the playoff, or he's at least going to make the playoff if they win in the Pac-12 championship game. And then Oklahoma, who basically was divorced by all three of those men, is sitting there at 6-6 with a guy that they said was a pariah of a coach and that they would uplift them over all of those losses. So I imagine Oklahoma fans are either still in denial that it's going to work out, or they are having second thoughts on how the last 12 months have unfolded for that program.
Yeah. Did you see Stuart Mandel's tweet where he got a bunch of crap for picking them 7-5 in the preseason? And he came back yesterday and said, you guys were right. I was an idiot to pick Oklahoma 7-5. I was like, Stu, that's a good tweet, my friend.
Yeah. I hate you, Stu, but that's good.
Yeah. look, the people like it when we take shots. DYU'd already went up the press box, but we had a shout out to the family from Lincoln who listens to our show, Lincoln, Nebraska. They came by yesterday to the tailgate and told us how much they enjoy listening to the pod on their drives down and to Manhattan for the games. And it was great to meet you guys. Appreciate you listening and tuning in. But yeah, they enjoy all the shots we take at the Huskers. So glad we can provide some entertainment and that the shots are worth value to some of you, because we do spend a considerable amount of time mocking other programs in the neighboring states for sure. Like Eli Drinkowitz showing up with a cigar in his mouth for going 6-6. Yeah. You know, that's great too. I mean, that's what I want to see from my head coach. If I'm a Missouri fan, you know, that's 6-win season. You beat Arkansas. Let's show up with cigars.
Yeah.
Hey, DY, go ahead if you got something.
I said if there is a coach maybe that is deserving of doing that, Shane Beamer. Props to him.
So that's another thing. He was at Oklahoma, right? I remember Shane Beamer getting like a casual mention or two in that Oklahoma search. And like,
Josh Heupel, 10-2.
Heupel, 10. Yeah, I'm adding this to the list. This is going to be content for my YouTube show tonight, DY. Thank you.
Josh Heupel, Shane Beamer, Cale Williams, Lincoln Riley, Spencer Rattler. Yeah. Sorry, Oklahoma fans.
Yeah. Yeah, that is good stuff, man. By the way, speaking of, you know, programs that we kind of bag on sometimes, you guys see the Iowa State game yesterday? You guys see what? Now, on one hand, that is rather concerning because Iowa State has a great defense and, you know, K-State's about to see that off. But 4-8, ending the season with that thud.
Couldn't be me.
Well, I was trying to figure out how they got 62 on that Iowa State defense, wondered if they just quit on the year. When I looked up the numbers, TCU only had 377 yards of offense. Hunter Deckers threw Hunter Decker's threw two pick sixes.
Dude, really?
Yeah. Iowa State had three turnovers. 377 yards of offense. It wasn't that dynamic. So don't get too fearful, guys. Be fine. K-State's what, -3 or +3 against TCU in the early pick'em line or spread?
2.5 on FanDuel because I already money lined the cast. So I used my winnings. The only thing that I made the entire year, I used the free sign up bonus or whatever to do K-State over 6.5. And then I took those winnings and reinvested in the money line for this week. So I'm all ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, if you're Iowa State with Hunter Deckers playing the way that he did this year, that they have a top quarterback recruit as well. Just kind of like Kansas State with Avery Johnson. They have that J.J. Cole guy that was at the Elite 11 and played pretty well. You have to think maybe he comes in with a shot to play early.
Yeah. John, do you think you can just you think through your connections again, you can just get us all tickets to the Big 12 title? You know, you seem to work the magic with that.
Well, I'm not sure if my magic extends outside of Manhattan, unfortunately. That's the problem. But, hey, if any of my guys that have hooked me up with tickets – have the inside track to a Big 12 championship ticket and they would like to donate to the John Kurtz NIL fund, please let me know. I did start thinking on the drive home. I was like, you know, I've been thinking this whole time, like, you know, don't put the cart in front of the horse. Hopefully it'll be Big 12 championship. Hopefully it'll be Sugar Bowl. And I was like, you know, like, of course I'll go and it'll be awesome. And then I started thinking, I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to have to like actually pay for things now. Like that sucks. But,
yeah. Well, you might be in the van with us, so you'll be covered there. We'll take care of your travel potentially. But I mean, look, I just circling back. I mean, we talked about how big this year was for Chris Klieman, right? And they hit it. They got the job done. We all three predicted K-State in the Big 12 championship on the preseason show, and it worked out. They did just exactly that. They're getting to the Big 12 championship. The pressure was on their most talented roster. They came through, and when things looked down, they always responded and bounced back in, you know, dominant fashion. And, you know, we would get down and they would come back from that. The Tulane game, the Oklahoma State or the Texas game, you know, it was just, it's such a big deal to get to the Big 12 championship and to come through when you're expecting it in the situations that they did. It's just, it's a major factor. And like we talked about to begin the show, you're on the national stage and people are going to be talking about you on all those shows all week. K-State is going to be one of the big subjects, and having College Game Day there at the Big 12 championship, that's a big deal too. And you guys mentioned Herb Street, if it's Herb Street and Fowler, I mean, look, usually that game, Sean McDonough, I believe that calls the Big 12 championship, or Wisniewski, but yeah, I think it'll probably be Fowler and Herb Street. So man, that's fun. It's I can't wait to get to Arlington and just take in the whole scene and cherish this moment.
Well, how about Paul Feinbaum going out on a limb last week and saying nobody's going to watch the Big 12 championship game? And then not only that, it's the most intriguing game of the day, and game day is going to be there. And then, yeah, like potentially Fowler and Herb Street like doing the game. Yeah, nobody's going to watch. Yeah.
As they send their big pregame, the network sends their big pregame show.
Paul Feinbaum will probably he'll probably be on it. He will be on the show, I'm sure. Like.
And it's the only one with two top 10 teams. Meanwhile, the Big Ten is going to send Purdue Big Ten is sending Purdue. LSU just got stomped by Texas A&M and plays Georgia. So that game becomes a lot less important. The Pac-12 actually is important. I'll give it to them. They've had a solid year, and that game has relevance. So, but the ACC is – the ACC and Big Ten, like, what are you doing? What are we doing here?
The other thing I would say, DY, when you came by the tailgate yesterday, there was a lot of weird things that happened on rivalry weekend, right? A lot of upsets, a lot of teams that had everything to play for. Like you look at Iowa, you know, dominating Nebraska through the years. All they got to do is beat Nebraska on their home field, and they end up losing that game, and they were dominated for much of it against a terrible Nebraska team. You look at Oregon losing to Oregon State, Clemson losing Clemson losing to South Carolina at home. I mean, all these upsets that occurred. Obviously, I hate to mention Ohio State, Michigan, DY, but it was a crazy week. And so for K-State to take care of business the way they did, it makes it even more impressive, because rivalries just are unpredictable. And there was a lot of unpredictable things that happened this weekend, but K-State did what they usually do, and that's win in dominant fashion against the Jayhawks.
Yeah, it's to be honest, Texas took care of business, went 8-4. It's probably a little bit better than I thought they would do this year. TCU, man, they got doubted all year. They were probably the most doubted team just because they were in the national spotlight, and all they did was win.
Well, you know what? Kansas State's got to do what they did to Oklahoma in 2003 and hand them their first L in the Big 12 championship. It's time for Kansas State to deliver some heartbreak to another fan base. So Fort Worth forever. Can't wait to see you guys down there. Can't wait.
Do we have any quick take on the game? Jed, our producer, says it's down to TCU minus 1.5.
It's gonna be hard for me not to take Kansas State just because the way that offense is playing. And if their offense is a juggernaut too, there's a chance that not only is there going to be a lot of eyeballs on this game because as the most relevant, it's two top 10 teams. Everyone's kind of, you know, hyped in to see if TCU can go undefeated 13-0. But, man, there is the potential to be a shootout, too. I mean, this game could be 45-42.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I say that, like, I remember feeling very strongly after the game coming out of that in Fort Worth. Like, God, give me another shot at these guys. Really want it. K-State's obviously playing even better now than then. Because, I mean, it's crazy to think, like, that was the game where we first found out about the Will Howard experience. Like, that was, yeah, again, the week leading up to the dumbest thing I've ever said on this pod when I took my stupid little shot at Will Howard. Like, that was coming off of the heels of that. And, yeah, you know, we've come full circle on that. So K-State is conceivably a much better team, I think, even right here. But at the same time, I do feel like TCU handling their business. I did not think TCU was making it here unbeaten. So the fact that they've handled their business does deserve quite a bit of respect.
We need to unearth that clip of you doing that.
Do we?
I think it was at T-Mobile Arena for Big 12 basketball media day.
It was. All right. You know what? Fair enough. If K-State wins the Big 12 championship, if Will Howard wins the Big 12 championship, we can bring it back up and play it. You can play it as many times as you want.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's do it.
Okay.
I think Cole's frozen right now. So,
oh, is Cole frozen? I thought, man, Cole just checked out. I was like, okay, he's a little too mad at me for the Will Howard comment. But that's all right,
good time to stop.
Yep, I think so. All right, well, it's 11 a.m. You know, if you want to celebrate, crack open a little 360 vodka, Ben Holiday bottled and bond bourbon. I think, you know, 5 o'clock somewhere. So go ahead, get that fired up. We'll talk to you soon. Appreciate everybody who came by the tailgate. Appreciate everybody who hung out with us live, here watching the show today. We'll be back at it, midweek for sure with a Big 12 championship game preview. May try and squeeze in a basketball pod there also. I mean, how about that? The boys getting it done with the Cayman Islands Classic championship on, Flow Hoops, of course. So lots to talk about and a lot of really good things happening right now in the world of K-State sports. Thank you for being with us. Enjoy it. Soak it all in. Have a hell of a week. And we will talk to you soon here on 3 Mile.